Blog Talk Radio.
Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013, and we invite you to please support us and our sponsors. Manhood Racing Culture, headed up by my co-host, Dr. James Jones. You can find him as James Jones on Facebook as well as on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com and as a like and group page on Facebook for Manhood Race and Culture. Also, please support Unity Design, headed up by my brother, Detroit brother, Arlene Gordon. You can find him on Facebook as Arlie Gordon as well as on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com, and Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. Also, please, always, we never want to forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines. Please support Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. So we've got some things that are coming up this summer. The March on Washington, supposed to be a Million Prisoners March coming up in August. Also 9-9, which recognizes Attica, the uprising in Attica, and we still have a lot of political prisoners, everybody. Technically, the majority of the people that are of melanin descent are prisoners of war. So the closer these events get, the more we're going to continue to delve into the topic of the state and its oppression against the people. And it says that anytime the government no longer serves the people, it is time for a new government, and that is exactly what we're looking at. So tonight we hope that you will get your pen and paper out, listen to tonight's Listen and Learn session. There's a lot that can be said about this topic of how the slave patrols turned into the modern-day police department and the way that the police has been allowed, permitted, blessed, and funded to continue to oppress us, keep us under the gun, literally. And it's a shame that we are constantly in a response to flight or fight. And because of those things, we are dealing with a certain amount of oppression that no other group of people are dealing with. This has been systematic. This has been generational, and it will continue to happen until we, the people, decide to do something about it. So please enjoy tonight's Listen and Learn session. If you'd like to get in contact with me, my phone number is 330-366-6838. You can find me as Queen Tahira on Facebook as well as on Instagram, Queen_Tahira. And Tahira is spelled T-A-H-I-Y-R-A-H. Please find me on Facebook as Queen Tahira and Instagram as Queen_Tahira. I'd love to communicate with you, connect with you, and find out what's going on in your particular area of the world. So as always, we love you, we thank you, we appreciate you, but most of all, we respect you. We will see you tomorrow live here on Sign of the Times. And if you have anything that you would like to contribute, you can always push one. And maybe we'll rock your mics by the time this Listen and Learn session is over, because we can't go up to 3 hours. So we'll see how the energy's vibing. We'll see you on the other side, y'all. Salute.
When a trooper stops you and asks for your driver's license, you don't expect this.
Can I see your license, please?
Get a guard! Get a guard! Get on the ground! Get on the ground!
I just got my license. You think you're my license? I've got my license.
Put your hands behind your back. 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 Put your hands behind your back.
Especially when you do exactly what the officer asked. 35-year-old LeVar Jones was shot in the hip and managed to survive. With a U.S. trooper, he's facing up to 20 years in prison. So we might see some accountability. Here's a video, though, from New York. That woman was pregnant, visibly pregnant, but something tells me these NYPD officers might not have to answer for their offense caught on camera. Why? Because it happens all the time. Solomon Kamasan, founder of Your World News Media Collective and producer of State sponsored slavery documentary, joins us in the Now tonight. Thanks so much for being with us. This is becoming such a reoccurring trend that there's a course for police officers involved in shooting incidents over how to win the media over. They boost this company of essential skills you can get that are needed to deal with fallout after you shoot someone. What does this say about the state of what was initially meant to be a service to the people?
Yeah, well, it says that the institution of policing in the United States of America is rogue by nature, it's corrupt by nature, and we also know it's institutionally racist by nature. It shows that the what I would call the fourth branch of the U.S. government, the corporate media in the U.S., the CNNs, the MSNBCs, the Fox Newses, and the like, they routinely, when there is an incident of police brutality, they oftentimes, have this cloud of doubt that is hovering over the victims. Instead of covering the story from the ground up and covering it in an impartial manner.
You mean always trying to find what the victim did wrong to provoke this?
Exactly. Routinely they do that. Methodically they do that.
How does one protect themselves from the police nowadays? I mean, one organization working for justice, I believe in New York, literally has put up a set of rules which you should follow not to be abused, attacked, or even shot out. How far is this going to go? And do people need to start learning how to protect themselves from the police?
Yeah, at the very least. I mean, that's what folks have to do. I mean, as an activist in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, that's what I've been doing with young people, trying to educate them, making sure that they know the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, that they know exactly how to conduct themselves when they're stopped, because you don't have to be doing anything wrong to be stopped by the police. Just, you know, minding your own business. I mean, it's happened to me on countless occasions. And so, but depending on what police officer you're dealing with, when they pull you over, if you make some kind of furtive movement, you know, that's a cause for them to shoot first and ask questions later. So we have to educate our communities, community by community, especially young people, in terms of how to compose themselves and how to record everything from the badge number to the license plate number, keeping your composure so that the battle for, you know, against police misconduct and police, and hopefully it doesn't escalate to police brutality, because sometimes there is no follow-up battle for that individual. Oftentimes that individual lose their lives, but hopefully it just stays at misconduct and so that the battle against that misconduct can be fought in civil courts and legal courts and so forth. And so it's really important at the very least for communities and individuals to arm themselves with the know-how, the information in terms of how to combat, you know, the police, you know, non-violently when you're approached, because it's something that honestly they have the guns. I mean, you know, you have to, you know, we have to find ways in which we can avert any more of these tragedies that continue to go on. And I wanted to add one thing: the root of the police in the United States of America starts with slave patrols. The first police in the United States of America were nothing other than slave patrols. They were protecting the property, the so-called property. Of plantation owners, slave owners. And so when a slave, an African slave, absconded, that slave patrol, those police, the original police, their job was to go out and to recapture those enslaved Africans, recapture them, bring them back to their plantations.
Solomon, I'm going to have to stop you there because we do have a guest that we want to join on the line whose son was actually a victim of police brutality. Thank you so much, though, for joining us in the Now, founder of Your World News Media Collective and producer of state-sponsored slavery. Do check out his documentary film.
Thank you. No problem.
Well, like Solomon was saying, sometimes such standoffs with the police do end in tragedy. I want to bring in the Now tonight Hawa Ba. It's been exactly 2 years since her 28-year-old son, Mohammed, was shot to death by police officers. Tell us, please, your story. How did your son end up dead?
Yes, my story. Good afternoon for everybody. First, I'm so happy to be with you people who curious what's happening in New York here city, special for the NYD police. I came here celebrating my son's birthday. Arrived here, meet my son sick. And when I meet my son sick, I call one of my friends who is a teacher. I tell him that my son's sick, he's not feeling well. He asked me what how I feel. I say, he talking, it's not straight, and he just in his house. He got womb already. I need to take him to the hospital. He say, okay, it's an adult help here. We'll call those people. They will help us to take him to the hospital. She called those people, and they say, do he used to smoke? We say, no, we didn't see. Do he used to drink? We said, no, we didn't see. He said, okay, what you people will do, call an ambulance, take him to the hospital. They can do general checkups that they can give him treatment.
So you
we
called,
say, okay,
you called. I just want
to
get this.
That day because
I just want to get this correct. You were calling for help, for medical help for your son. That was the phone call you made, and the police came.
I called an ambulance.
And
yes,
the police
I called
came.
An ambulance when you're listening to them. Police came and I tell them, oh, I don't call police, I call an ambulance. They say, oh, mom, don't worry. Here, when you call an ambulance, we will come first. He said, when we see the sick person, we will call the ambulance. We walk together, they knock the door. I say, go away. They walk together, they knock my son door. He opened the door. He said, oh, police, you knock on the wrong door. Wait, go away, I don't call you. They say, oh, no, I came to you. They want to force enter on his door. He locked the door and go back to bed. I want to talk to my son. He said, oh, mom, don't worry. Go down. We'll talk to him. We'll take him to the hospital. He will get well. Don't worry. We started going to fifth floor, going down to the second floor. I started seeing people with seals, hammers, and things. I said, hey, why are those people going? Let me talk to my son. He will open the door. He said, no, no, don't worry. Go outside. He will be okay. We'll take him to the hospital. They push us to go outside, just telling us he will be okay. Let's go outside. He will be okay. I arrive outside. Say, ho, who you know here? I say, what you mean, ho, I know here? I don't understand what who I know here. I just meet my son sick. I want to take him to the best hospital. I will pay for it. I call for that help. He said, don't worry, he will get well.
And at this
say,
time, and at
well,
this time, Mohammed had been shot by the police. Is that correct?
In his bed. No, no, no. At that time, he was in his bed. At that time, he was in his bed. They just drove us outside, then they come, broke his door, shot him on his own room.
Because the police report, says that he was armed with a knife and that the police had thought that he actually was stabbed by him.
Yes. Now they said that one make they don't indict them. Now we're on the federal court. Then the lawyer asked him, okay, you say Mr. Ba have a knife, but the mom said, let me talk to my son, you didn't upset her. And she said, maybe those people don't understand my English. Send two people to talk to you, you should let her talk to her son. Okay, we hear you. Why the knife you say Mr. Ba have? Because of that knife you kill him. They say, oh no, we don't have the knife, we have the paper. They say, okay, what's wrong with the knife? He say, oh, the Harris can take the knife. Harris can take the knife, swipe to the swim, swipe to the ocean. The people say, no, the lawyer say, we got to go further of that. You cannot say the only evidence you got to say you killed a sick person who is in his own apartment, student who live for his parents and things because he have the knife. You don't have the knife, we need justice for Mohammed Ba. Not just for Mohammed Ba alone, for the future children who are growing up here, for the future generation who are growing up here.
All right,
as
Tawa Ba.
The mother of Ahmad Jallo, Sombel.
I'm going to have to stop
yes.
you there. Such a terrible story, really. I do hope you do find justice for your son, if that can be said after he's dead. Of course, the two-year anniversary of Mohammed Ba being shot by NYPD officers 2 years ago today. Thank you so much for joining us
yes.
in the now.
Peace and greetings, family. My topic of conversation is the origins of the modern-day police department, a.k.a. the slave patrollers. Now, we've been watching on the news, and we can't get away from the information that we've seen with Black Lives Matter and Police Lives Matter or All Lives Matter. And so recently, a couple of days ago, we saw that the prosecutor's office decided to dismiss Freddie Gray's case. Now, as much of a travesty of injustice that is, we have to ask the question, how did it get so bad? So you have to go back to the origins of the police department so that we can see what the intent and the purpose of the police department was in the beginning. Now, was it to protect and serve? Was it to stop criminal activity? The answer to the question is no. Now, when you look at the beginnings and inceptions of the police department, it came out of slavery. The slave patrol was originated by different states, different counties, different municipalities, and the government in order to protect the property rights of the slave, the rich slave owners. Also, you saw that the slave patrols were a mechanism and a tool to be able to control the actual African descendant or the slave population to stop them from rising up and causing insurrection. Now, in 1704, South Carolina instituted its first slave patrol. Now, they used county law, and they made it mandatory for the white males to have to be a part of these slave patrols. In essence, they drafted these people into slave patrolling. The names we would hear was patrollers, paddy rollers, paddies. When we think of the police departments, when you look at their big vans or when they bring people in, you talk about the paddy wagons. All of this stemmed from back in slavery dealing with slave patrollers. Now, when you talk about the function of the slave patrollers, what were they? Well, the biggest function was for them to return the escaped slaves back. The second thing was to stop revolt or insurrection. But the third was typically just to control, intimidate a particular population so that you can keep them in line. And that's exactly what they did. Now, these slave patrols did not have a lot of money. So what they did have was whips. And they had intimidation. And so their job was to go from plantation to plantation to make sure that there were no slaves walking around idly, trying to escape. And each slave who was going from plantation to plantation, if they were given permission by their slave owners, they had to have a pass. And so the slave patroller's job was to look for this pass. But many times, even if they had a pass, their job was to intimidate and scare these slaves. Now, the slave patrol caught on through different municipalities and different counties. And so what you started seeing was the legalization and the codification of these particular organizations. Hence, we see an actual modern day policing organization that was given money by the local government and the local municipalities. Even Congress passed laws dealing with runaway slaves. So when you have these group of white males who are forced, and they were forced to be able to patrol the slaves, there was already resentment because they thought blacks were subhuman anyway. But now you're forced to leave your own home, your own property, regardless of who you were, unless you were a rich slave owner, and you had to go out and spend your time patrolling black men and black women. And so it was set up with a hostile environment. And slave patrolling started in 1704, and it did not end until emancipation of the Civil War. During the 4 years of the Civil War, that first year, you saw the slave patrollers escalate. Why? Because they knew that with the Civil War, there'll be more and more of insurrection or uprising of the slaves. So the government borrowed from the state militia in order to continue to control the slave population. Now, these slave patrollers, one of the things that they would do was they would come into these houses, the slave houses, randomly. They made sure that, one, they didn't have books. They made sure that they did not have excess items that could be mistaken to view as if they were going to use this to run away with. Basically, they did whatever they wanted to do. And it didn't matter if you was a compliant slave. It didn't matter if you were a non-compliant slave. Most of the slave patrollers would in fact, beat, whip, all kind of just inhumane atrocities on the slaves. You know, one of the things that we know them most for is the lynching. And you didn't have to have a real reason why you lynched a slave, because the government, the local municipality, the counties, they made sure that the white man was exonerated. Now, in certain exceptions, if the slave patrollers brutally beat or killed one of the slave owners' property, then, you know, there was retribution from the slave owners. And it depended on who the slave owner was. So you see that you had these searches, these random searches, these arbitrarily and capricious searches. So if you look at the modern day policing in the culture that we see nowadays, and we're watching it unfold on TV as we go along, you see that these police officers, modern day police officers, you know, they have no regard for people's rights. They have no regard for people's lives. And when you look at the origins and the philosophy and the culture and the sentiments of where modern day police came from, a lot of times these police officers carry that particular sentiment in their policy and their control and their implementation, and the government backs them up. And when comparing the modern day police officers to the slave patrols, the founding fathers of the police department, what you see is you have the stop and frisk law, where, you know what, black people are randomly stopped and frisked. You see the racial profiling is extremely prevalent among brown and black people. And today I went to court, and one of the things that kind of startled me and stunned me that I had to do research on, and the prosecutor herself had to go and Google and see what this particular new weapon that the police department has, is what you call the automated license plate reader. Yeah, the automated license plate reader. And what that is, it's a device that goes on top of the police car. It goes on top of billboards. It goes on top of signs. And what it does is a camera that works with fast-moving objects, and it can record and take in the license plate and automatically allow that information from the license plate to come up to capture the person's individual information, whether they have any warrants. And so what you're finding now here in Houston, Texas, is that these officers will be posted up, and they will have this automated license plate reader, and they will, in essence, racially profiling certain particular cars. They'll pull them over because they'll have a warrant for a traffic ticket. And then because they have a warrant for a traffic ticket, they'll do what's called a search incident to an arrest, which they legally can do. And then they'll find some type of contraband, something that's illegal, or, you know, in case of dirty cops on the street, they'll plant drugs just so that they can get a conviction or get an arrest outside of getting them to go to a traffic court dealing with their traffic ticket. So, you know, the modern day police department has so many tools that continues to actually intimidate, threaten black people, creates an atmosphere of big brother or surveillance. They're continuously watching a group of people so that they won't rise up or have some type of insurrection, especially in this day and time, because you find in more and more people rising up against the injustices of the police department, the injustices of police brutality. And so now you have these tools and devices and these laws that are enacted so that we can, again, control a particular population of people and create more economics for the property owners. Now, I was in last week, I was in a small county dealing with a case, and the county may have had about 10,000 residents. 75% of those residents were black. Now, the county, the infrastructure of the county, it was terrible. You could tell it was a small town. But the courts and the police department, that infrastructure, you could tell that they put a lot of money in that infrastructure. And then what surprised me the most is when you're driving up, what you see is tanks. I saw they had like three military, I won't call them tanks, they were Humvees. And then when you walked into the police station, the first thing you saw was this wall of past sheriffs and from back into the 1800s. And then what you also saw next to that wall was a quilt in a frame. And in the quilt in the frame, it said, "Police Lives Matter." Now, you know, I knew immediately that what the sentiment was in that particular town. I knew that immediately that there were slave patrollers in that town, if you look at the history of that town, which in fact they did have slave patrollers. But when you look at what's going on now, it's modern day slavery. One example in that town, there was a man who had was charged for possession of a controlled substance, very small amount. And a jury convicted him of 85 years in that particular small town, which was not uncommon for that particular small town. So why am I talking about that? Okay, so we're talking about slave patrols and modern day policing. And so during slave patrols, you're talking about economics and you're talking about the controlling of a particular group of people. Now, I want you to always focus on the money and anything that we see systematically and the systematic injustices that we deal with on a daily basis. At the root of everything is economics. And so when you have the government feeding, you know, money into these policing municipalities, then you have to follow the money. The more arrests they have, you know, more money that that particular county or that particular municipality gets from when someone goes to jail. They have to post a bond, and then they have to get a lawyer. And then they if they go on probation, they have to pay probationary fees and community supervision fees. They have to pay so much money into this particular criminal justice system. Now, if that's even if they make it out of there without going to jail. And then if they go to jail, then you're talking about modern day slavery. Modern day slavery, because they use these people in jail here in Texas, Texas Department of Correction. They have private corporations who come in and they ask to use the slave labor or the prison labor in order to produce or create their products. So here we have, again, we have the policing department who's being used unknowingly, maybe, or, you know, or unwittingly knowing that they're being used to sustain this economy based on slave labor, modern day slave labor. When you look at the history of slavery and when the slaves were emancipated, what did they do? They created these codes, these black codes, or the Jim Crow laws, in order to continue to criminalize or institutionalize these black people so that they can continue with the economic prosperity of the former slave masters. And so if you criminalize them, you put them on a plantation, you put them on a farm, you put them in a prison farm, and you force them to work for free. Again, modern day slavery, modern day policing. You look at what happened with Freddie Gray just recently and how these police officers were exonerated. And they got to walk away. And so we're concerned that there is no justice. But the thing is, you have to ask the question, was the system set up to give us justice in the first place? And the answer is emphatically no. So what do we do about it? We continue to fight. We continue to stand up. I'm doing my job by bringing light to the reality and the truth and the origins of where this came from. And so when we realize that this particular institution was never meant to protect and serve us, it was never meant to give us justice, then we must stand up and find out and fight what is it that we need to do for ourselves in order to have justice. One, you have to get these dirty cops out of our neighborhoods. Let us be able to patrol our neighborhoods. Let us be able to secure our own neighborhoods. Give us the resources so that we may protect and serve our own people and get this particular institution of people out of our neighborhoods who were never set up to protect and serve us in the first place. So I just want to encourage black people, minority people, let's continue to do for ourselves, because if we are looking to someone else to do for ourselves and expecting justice, then we are suffering and will continue to suffer the consequences of this injustice. Allow us to protect and serve ourselves. Thank you.
What's going on YouTube? Jay Miller Speaks Out here, back at you guys with another video. I'm your host, Jay Miller. So today, in today's video, I figure I'd go ahead and give a brief history lesson on how policing started in the United States of America and how it affected black people back then and how it affects black people now. Now, you have a lot of people out there that basically wonder why black people feel a certain type of way about the police, why black people don't trust the police, etc., etc. And some of the people that are asking these questions genuinely really want to know, because they really just don't don't know their history. And then on the other hand, you have the racist people out there that love to make excuses of why, you know, things happen to black people. Oh, you know what, you should just, you know, listen to what the black people, listen to what the police have to say, and, you know, don't run and all this type of stuff, and just comply, and, you know, and these type of things wouldn't happen to you. A lot of these people know the history of the police in this country, and what it is that they do not want, you know, the regular common folk to do the history lesson and learn the history to know the real truth about why the police was even made in America. Now, it's important for people to, you know history, because if you don't know history, then you're pretty much lost. History of your country shows people why things are the way they are today, in my own personal opinion, you know what I mean? And it's just the truth. Now, I figure, you know what, though? I'm going to go ahead and shut a lot of people down right now, because, you know, there are a lot of ignorant folks that's out there that you love having opinions, but you don't know your freaking history. And a lot of times you're sounding like freaking buffoons. So let's go ahead and get into the history of, you know, black folks and the police. And we're going to learn why the police were even created. So it says, a brief history of slavery and the origins of American policing. And before I go ahead and, you know, get any further into this video, okay, for the Grammy Nazis out there, okay, you know, nobody's perfect here, okay, man? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, a lot of people, you know, look at you as you're some type of freaking professional. We're just reading here, okay? So there's going to be messed ups. It is what it is. So let's keep on rolling. It says, the birth and development of the American police can be traced to a multitude of historical, legal, and political economic conditions. It says, the institution of slavery and the control of minorities, however, were two of the more formidable historic features of American society shaping early policing. Slave patrols and night watches, which later became modern police departments, were both designed to control the behaviors of minorities. So what were their thing that they were going to do? They were both designed to control the behaviors of minorities. For example, New England settlers appointed Indian constables to police Native Americans. National Constable Association, 1995. The St. Louis Police were founded to protect residents from Native Americans in that frontier city. And many Southern police departments began as slave patrols, okay? In 1704, the colony of Carolina developed the nation's first slave patrol. Slave patrols helped to maintain the economic order and to assist the wealthy landowners in recovering and punishing slaves who essentially were considered property. Let's keep on rolling, people. It says, Policing was not the only social institution enmeshed in slavery. Slavery was fully institutionalized in the American economic and legal order, with laws being enacted at both the state and national divisions of government. Virginia, for example, enacted more than 130 slave statutes between 1689 and 1865. Slavery and the abuse of people of color, however, was not merely a Southern affair, as many have been taught to believe. Connecticut, New York, and other colonies enacted laws to criminalize and control slaves. Congress also passed the Fugitive Slave Laws, laws allowing the detention and return of escaped slaves. In 1773 and 1850, as Turner, Giscopesi, and Vandeveer, hopefully I didn't sit there and pronounce that wrong, but whatever, said da 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 remark, the literature clearly established that a legally sanctioned law enforcement system existed in America before the Civil War for the express purpose of controlling the slave population and protecting the interests of slave owners. It says, the similarities between the slave patrols and modern American policing are too salient to dismiss or ignore. Okay, let's go ahead and read that one more time. Okay, it says, the similarities between the slave patrols and modern American policing are too salient to dismiss or ignore. Hence, the slave patrol should be considered a forerunner of modern American law enforcement. So, looks like a lot of bad things were going on back then, guys. Just like they are going on today. But you know what, though? That's what American history is there for. To show people why things are the way they are today. Okay, so far, we know that policing was started to, you know what though, patrol slaves, okay? It wasn't there to patrol white people, nobody else pretty much, but to patrol slaves. And you know what though, they had something that had to do with the Native Americans, people of color, okay? So this is why policing was pretty much, you know, created in the United States of America. It wasn't created to, you know, just to be, you know, policing and helping people. No, it was to keep black folks in check, so far, that what we know, right? So let's go ahead and keep on reading. It says, the legacy of slavery and racism did not end after the Civil War. In fact, it can be argued that argue that extreme violence against people of color became even worse with the rise of vigilante groups who resisted Reconstruction. It says, because vigilantes, by definition, have no external restraints, lynch mobs had a justified reputation for hanging minorities first and asking questions later. It says, because of its tradition of slavery, which rested on the racist rationalization that blacks were subhuman, let's go ahead and read that one more time, which rested on the racist rationalization that blacks were subhuman. Now, don't we hear about that all the time? Don't you hear a lot of people in today's society always referring to black people as subhumans? We're dangerous. We're stupid. You know what, though? We have low IQs, all this type of stuff. The exact same thinking that a lot of their ancestors have, but, you know, a lot of their excuses, oh, it's because of the way you act. Oh, it's because of this. Oh, it's because of that. No, it's because of the color of our skin, okay? That's exactly what it was, because here you have these black folks, they weren't doing nothing wrong to nobody, and they still got treated different. So, you know, though, that tells you why a lot of people are the exact way they are now from back then, because a lot of these, these ideologies are pretty much spread from generation to generation. Hate is taught, people. Let's go ahead and keep on reading. It says, America had a long and shameful history of mistreating people of color. Like, we all didn't know that. We know that, right? Okay, so it says, long after the end of the Civil War, it says, perhaps the most infamous American vigilante group, the Ku Klux Klan, started in the 1860s, was notorious for assaulting and lynching black men for transgressions that would not be considered crimes at all had a white man committed them. Now, let's go ahead and sit there and just read that one more time, people. It says, had a white man committed them. Hold on, let me scroll back. So it says, the Ku Klux Klan started in the 1860s, was notorious for assaulting and lynching black men for transgressions that would not be considered crimes at all had a white man committed them. Now, don't we see that today in American society now? White person does something. Oh, you know, they were mentally unstable, you know. Oh, you know, they were just, you know, poor little kid. They can do no wrong, this and that. White person commits a crime. Black person commits a crime. White person gets less time for it. Okay? Same type of stuff going on today. That is just a small fraction of a lot of the things that's going on today that still went on back then. So this is the reason why, you know, a black person commits crime. Oh, he's a thug, and, you know, he deserved to die and all this type of stuff. But when a white person does it, they make a lot of excuses. We see this going on in America as we seen back then, or as we know of back then. You know what I mean? So American, you know, society hasn't changed very much. You know, a lot of the ideologies and things that go on still go on today, as we could see, and this is talking about just history from back in the day. So it says lynching occurred across the entire county, not just in the South. Finally, in 1871, Congress passed the Ku Klux Klan Act, which prohibited state actors from violating the civil rights of all citizens, in part because of law enforcement's involvement within the infamous group. Well, well, well. So here we go again. Here you have problems back then with the Ku Klux Klan, you know, infiltrating the police department, treating black people like freaking animals, beating them up, killing them, all this type of stuff. And in, 2006, the FBI did make a report basically saying that, what do you know? You know, you have a lot of these hate monger groups, you know, like the Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis. They have been infiltrating the police departments for years. That's the reason why you see racist judges. You find out that, you know what, they're part of the Ku Klux Klan and things of that nature. You know, you have a lot of cops, you have a lot of lawyers, and they're putting away black people at record numbers. And then you have, you know what, the same exact people that see, this is why, you know what, black people are dangerous, because they're the ones committing all the crimes. When you have, you know what, though, a lot of these judges and things not giving black people the exact same passes as they would a white person, okay? Basically, you know, giving, you know, black people, you know, life in jail for crimes they didn't commit, or first-time offenses, you know, 20 years. I've done a lot of videos where you have a lot of black men, you know, serve time for things that they didn't even commit. Then freaking 20-something or almost 30 years later, they're getting released. And then all of a sudden they expect, they expect a lot of these same police departments that put them away on purpose to accept their apology. That's the only thing they have for them is an apology, okay? And then you have, you know, these racist people. See, black people only 13% of the population, they commit all these crimes, this and that. Black people are very much of a targeted group in America, and guess what? I have stated these facts. I've showed the percentages and et cetera, et cetera. And if you want to go ahead and do, you know, try to make up excuses, you can get up online also and look up these percentages of how black people are pretty much targeted, the most targeted group up in America, and, you know, the ones who are more likely to get thrown up in jail, who, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the list goes on and on and on, but then you have these people, oh, they commit all the crimes, this and that. Well, guess what? This is one of the reasons why, man, because you got people, you know, hey, let's go ahead and just throw them up in jail. Throw them up in jail. Freaking, you know, KKK members infiltrating the police department. Let's go ahead and keep on rolling. It says this legislation, however, did not stem the tide of racial or ethnic abuse that persisted well into the 1960s. So it says, although having white skin did not prevent discrimination in America, being white undoubtedly made it easier for ethnic minorities to assimilate into the mainstream of America. It says the additional burden of racism has made that transition more much more difficult for those whose skin is black, brown, red, or yellow. In no small part because of the tradition of slavery, blacks have been targets of abuse. Here you ever ran? I've never met these people at all, but here they have. Blacks have long been targets of abuse. I just said that, right? Okay, so it says the use of patrols to capture runaway slaves was one of the precursors of formal police forces, especially in the South. It says the disastrous legacy, it says the disastrous legacy persisted in an element of the police role even after the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. In some cases, police harassment simply meant people of African descent were more likely to be stopped and questioned by the police. Isn't that what they say today, that we're more likely to be stopped and questioned by the police? But if I sit there and talk about it, J. Miller speaks out, you're pulling the race card. Yeah, okay. So it says, while at the other extreme, they have suffered beatings and even murder at the hands of white police. Questions still arise today about the disproportionately high numbers of people of African descent killed, beaten, and arrested by police in the major urban cities of America. Boom. There you have it, folks. Now, as you guys can see, pretty much, policing started pretty much in the United States of America as slave catchers. It wasn't to protect all citizens of America, to keep, you know, people calm and safe in America. It was to keep black people up in check. This is why you have a lot of these racist people leaving racist comments always. Yeah, that's what a nigger deserves. That's right. Another nigger bites the dust. And that's what they get. And this is the reason why you have a lot of these people, you know, though, that make a lot of these comments, because they know of the history of the policing in America was basically to keep black people up in check. You know what I mean? Now, I'm not sitting up there saying that no white people end up getting beat up by the police or have not received any, you know, police brutality. But for a long time, whites did not, you know, receive police brutality like that. A lot of the things that would happen to black folks was not happening to white folks up in America. And when they did start happening to white folks in America, that's why you have a lot of white people now saying, man, now they finally want to see what black people and Latinos and other people of color were talking about. People don't want to believe things until it starts happening to them. But, you know, though, this is the history of the policing of America, in America. And I'm sorry if I had to rush through you guys, if I, you know, was stumbling over my words because I am kind of up in a rush right now. But, you know, so it's important that you know your freaking history. You know, a lot of these racist savages get up on here and act like they don't know what's going on, why, you know, it is the way it is. But basically everything that was going on back then, pretty much, as they explained in this article, is pretty much still going on now. But, you know, there are laws and stuff, you know what I mean, that says they can't do that. You know, what are you talking about, J. Miller Speaks Out, man? You don't know what you're talking about. I know exactly what I'm talking about because, you know, though, I watch a lot of people up on YouTube that, and I'm not going to say their names because I don't want any, you know, any you racist savages going to attack their channels, but a lot of people up on YouTube are very much educated on a way higher level than I am. And, you know, though, some of the things that they talk about, I go ahead and, you know, look it up myself, start reading things, and you will know why this country is ran the way it is because of our history. History repeats itself, okay? So it's a shame that the only reason why policing was even created in America was basically to keep black people down, pretty much. You know what I'm saying? Keep black people in check, murder them, do all types of, you know, nefarious acts towards black people and people of color, okay? here you have the history. You can't argue with me about it. You have to sit there and, you know, get mad at, you know, the country of how it was, you know, pretty much created this way. But, you know, that's just my opinion upon this. I'm not going to go ahead and go too much into this video too further. I just want to go ahead and state the facts. These are the facts of American policing, and this is one of the main reasons why black people feel, you know, a certain type of way about, you know, cops, you know, brutalizing black people, and, you know, they get mad, and, you know, they riot, and, you know, et cetera, because this is not something that just happened, to, you know, yesterday. This has been going on for years in America, ever since the beginning, okay? So, that's just my thoughts. Leave your thoughts. Let me know what you guys think about this. I will post a link in the description box for you guys to go ahead and look. But you know what, though, if you want to go ahead and look more up into, you know, police, how policing started in America, just go ahead and Google it. OK, so now, you know what, though, if you didn't know, now, you know, and you have no more excuses to sit there and say, well, black people were just complaining, because you know what, though, this has been happening to black people and our ancestors ever since we've came to this country. Say so. You know what, though, I'm just, you know, I just want people to know their history and to, you know, I'm just trying to enlighten people. OK, so that's just my thoughts. You guys, let me know what you guys think. Till next time, subscribe, peace out, and have a good one. Peace. If you enjoy J. Miller Speaks Out content, please feel free to subscribe to my channel and hit the like button up on this video. We also be much appreciated that if you have a Facebook account, go ahead and like my Facebook fan page. And for all you Twitter heads out there, please feel free to follow me up on Twitter. And if you really, really, really like J. Miller Speaks Out and would like to help me further my progress as a content creator, please feel free to donate. So shout out to my supporters and shout out to my haters. And as always, have a good one. Peace.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Paul Jay in Baltimore. Last night, five police officers were killed during an anti-police brutality rally in Dallas, Texas, shot by snipers. Soon after, the local police force used a bomb-disposing robot to kill a suspect in the shooting. This followed two fatal police encounters in the previous 2 days. On Wednesday evening, police shot and killed Philando Castile at a routine traffic stop. He was in the car with his 4-year-old daughter and his girlfriend, who live streamed the aftermath on Facebook. The previous day, after midnight on Tuesday, Alton Sterling was killed in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Officers pinned him to the ground, and another fired multiple shots. His death was captured on cell phone video. Now joining us to discuss these events from Houston, Texas, except I believe he's now in a year in Detroit, Dr. Gerald Horn. Gerald holds the John Jay and Rebecca Moore Chair of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston. Thanks for joining us, Gerald.
Thank you, and actually I'm in Berkeley, California.
You're in Berkeley, I'm sorry. Gerald, the killing of the cops is a tragedy. These police were just standing around. And one can understand why their families and other law enforcement officers and families are concerned and so on. They were executed, assassinated. But so were a lot of other people. In fact, something like 566 people have been shot by police just so far this year. And of course, we know the rates of people of color being shot is something like three times those of white people. Although even there, it should be said, in terms of pure numbers, there's more white people being killed than people of color. And one, it doesn't take a stretch. I don't have the research, but it doesn't take a stretch to think most of those are poor white people, not wealthy white people. And it's important. That's not just a numerical issue, because there are as many wealthy white people. If you take wealth by $100,000, $125,000 and up, there's actually as many of them as there are poor people in the country. But clearly, racism, structural racism, a culture within the police departments that it makes a cop think that it's rationable, justifiable, and without much consequence to shoot a black person with very little reason or threat. This culture within police forces that President Obama says we should get the bias out of police forces, this is... Every time something like this happens, police killing, this is said year after year, decade after decade, this culture within police departments, that allows for this type of these executions of people on the streets and in cars for having taillights out. This persists. Why does this culture persist in the way it does?
Well, it's not just the culture of the police departments, it's the culture of the society itself. The police department as an institution only exists to serve and protect, in the first place, the ruling elements of the society, and they therefore reflect the ruling elements of society. There is now a cliche in the United States that says we need an honest conversation about, quote, race, unquote. We actually need an honest conversation about racism. More than that, we need an honest conversation about the founding of the United States of America that strips away the mythology that suggested that this was a flawless revolt against British rule, when we all know that slaves did not necessarily benefit from this revolt against British rule. Certainly the Native American population did not benefit. And what came to be as a result of the founding of the United States was a culture that always feared the possibility of slave revolts. That led to the construction of so-called slave patrols, which then led to the formation of modern-day police departments. And modern-day police departments have yet to shed their role as an enforcer of law in the first place against poor black people. And that's what you saw in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That's what you saw in Minnesota just the other day. Until we come to grips with that basic phenomenon, that is to say, this idea that there was this great leap forward for humanity in 1776, despite the fact that it was a great leap backwards for people of African descent in particular, until we come to grips with that anomaly, we're always going to be witnessing the kinds of tragedies that we've seen in the past 72 hours.
Yeah, I think it's important that this point you're making, the way it continues today, the reason for slavery wasn't simply some white people didn't like some black people. The reason is to get free labor, and then the laws enforce that. Even as laws against it's illegal for a slave to learn or to be taught to read, for example. The underlying thing is the free labor, and now the underlying thing is cheap labor. And poor, desperate people willing to work for minimum and even below minimum wages, and the money being made out of the mass incarceration industry, that there's a reason why there's a whole set of laws to repress people that are being super exploited. But President Obama says we have a clip of him here. I don't know if it's ready, where he talks about this being an American problem. Have we got that ready?
This is not just a black issue. It's not just a Hispanic issue. This is an American issue that we should all care about. All fair-minded people should be concerned. To be concerned about these issues is not to be against law enforcement.
I think that's the point. Like, how can you be concerned about these issues and not be, it's not so much about being against law enforcement, it's the laws that are getting enforced. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it seems to me that President Obama has a case to answer. I think that looking back, historians will adjudge that he committed many blunders, to put it mildly, when dealing with the African-American community. First of all, it's his talking down to the black community. When the black community comes to him with specific demands, and keep in mind, these are the demands of a community that are the descendants of enslaved laborers. Rather than deal with the particularities of the black condition, he tells us that he's the president of all the people, and he just can't deal with black issues. He doesn't tell that to any other communities. When the LGBT community comes to him with specific demands, he doesn't tell them that he's the president of all the people. Obviously, that's a dodge. Perhaps Mr. Obama is surrendering to the mass white racism in this society. What I mean is that if you look back at his presidency, a turning point was the summer of 2009, when Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. was arrested at his own home by a Cambridge, Massachusetts police officer. This was obviously a stupid error by the officer, and Mr. Obama took the side of the professor. But in the white racist community, which is more than a minority of that particular community, there was outrage. It was felt that he should have sided with the police officer. And therein, you begin to see the decline of what was already a rather low popularity rating of Mr. Obama in that particular community. So historians are going to have to grapple with this particular fact. Have we reached this nadir in terms of what used to be called race relations because of white racism on a mass basis? Or does the particular fecklessness of Mr. Obama have something to do with it?
Right. I just want to give some examples of what I mean when I say law enforcement. It's the laws that are the issue and laws that enforce poverty. For example, in Baltimore, if you don't pay your water bill on time, you can lose your house. You can be foreclosed. If you don't leave your house, it's the police or the sheriffs that show up and enforce that foreclosure because you couldn't afford your water bill. If you go to jail in Baltimore, you're not allowed a visitor. If you're awaiting trial and you've not yet been convicted of anything, you're not allowed a visitor for 90 days outside of a lawyer, no family, no friends. If you try to get bail in Baltimore, it's only very recently that you're actually allowed by right to have an attorney at your bail hearing. Up until about a year and a half ago, that wasn't even true. And even now, public defenders find it impossible to keep up with representing bail cases. And bails are set by commissioners. The nitty-gritty of what it means to enforce a regime of control over people, many of whom are living in something close to a ghetto. And the essence of the policing is make sure the violence stays within the ghetto. Make sure it's poor black on poor black violence. And, you know, in Baltimore last year we had 348 murders, almost the same as New York, which is 13 times the size of Baltimore. But as long as that's contained within the ghetto, that's within the realm of acceptability. If what happened after Freddie Gray, if you actually charge police with abuse, make charge with arrest without probable cause, and you actually charge for murder, the police say, well, then we'll sit back and do nothing. And the threat there is, we'll sit back and eat donuts all day. And sure, maybe the violence in poor black areas will go up. But wait, well, what happens if we sit around even longer and that violence gets to you in your gated community or your Roland Park, your wealthy areas that so far are very little touched by any of this? So I talked to a cop once, and he said to me, you know, me meaning you as society, you have to decide what you want from us, police. Do you want us to hand out flowers, or you want us to be the hammer? And if you want to maintain society as it is, then you're asking us to be the hammer.
Well, that last vignette you just related reminds me of a scene from the award-winning film Missing about the CIA-sponsored coup in Chile in 1973, where a U.S. national is caught up in this and is executed by the Chilean fascists. His father comes to Santiago de Chile and inquires about his son and is told by the U.S. Embassy that we are backing this coup for you. If you want to live a good life in the United States of America, then you have to accept this coup and presumably accept the collateral damage of your child, your son, being killed. I think that's very cynical. I think it's very unfortunate, and ultimately it's unsustainable. Speaking of which, it's very interesting to look at these police killings. Look at Eric Garner, a man trying to support his family in Staten Island a few years ago, selling cigarettes, apparently, and then is wrestled to the ground and suffocated. The case in Baton Rouge just a day or so ago, a young black man trying to support his family by selling CDs, and he is wrestled to the ground and then shot, apparently. What society is telling these men is that you cannot even support your family by being an entrepreneur, even though entrepreneurial activity routinely is celebrated in this society.
Well, I had this discussion once with a family, a cop and his family, discussing these issues of police killings and such, and they were talking about, well, what would you do? It's such a dangerous job. It's such a dangerous situation. And certainly it can be dangerous, and it's more dangerous than me sitting in this chair doing interviews, there's no doubt. But let's put it in some perspective. There's about 1 million police in the United States. There's an average of around 50 cops a year actually get killed by gunfire, 50 out of 1 million cops. And compare that, for example, to construction workers. 4,821 construction workers are killed in 2014. That's 92 a week, 13 a day. 4,821 construction workers. And where is the crazed media frenzy about that? Yes, it's dangerous to be a cop, but there are many occupations that are far more dangerous. And to say because someone's lying on the ground and maybe they have a gun, you can't even see one. There's like the bottom line here for me is if you can't figure out when it's appropriate to shoot or not, and there's no gun in sight, there's no direct threat in sight, then you shouldn't be a cop. But the reason cops think they can get away with this is that they can.
Well, the National Rifle Association, the gun lobby, is going to be in the spotlight as a result of the Minnesota slaying, because recall that the young man who was slain supposedly had a permit to carry a pistol, and apparently he was reaching for ID to show it to the officer when the officer killed him. Now, you would think that the NRA would be up in arms, literally, if not figuratively, about this, since the right to bear arms is their calling card. But they've been conspicuously silent in the aftermath of this killing. And I think that this says something about the society, and it says something, quite frankly, about where we're heading, which does not seem to be in a promising direction.
Well, there was a tweet from a congressman, a former congressman, I don't have the name in front of me, but there's been other things like this all over the internet, essentially saying Black Lives Matter and you people that are defending cop killings, look out, we're coming for you. And this whole idea that the recent period of resistance against cop killing is what created the situation in Dallas, and outright calls for... Sorry, I'm being told the name. What's the name?
Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh. And where was he a congressman from? Illinois, former congressman from Illinois. Put this in some perspective, because with the rise of Trump, and not that it's just Trump himself, but historically, at times when economies are in meltdown, and when there's unemployment and there's a lot of anti-immigration rhetoric. Certainly in Europe, we saw and are seeing the rise of very overt fascist movements. And the killing of these cops seems to create a kind of a door, a window for some of this more overt racism to express itself. To what extent is the continuation of the killing of black men and women sometimes and the response of the media to these killings of cops, which simply isn't proportional in the scale of things, partly a reflection of this rise of fascistization in America?
Well, it's deeper than your perceptive comment suggested. That is to say, in the transatlantic community, including the United States, there has been a concerted effort in recent decades to repress and suppress class-based organizations, particularly trade unions. In that context, I found the press conference by the Dallas police chief just a few hours ago quite telling. According to his account, and you have to take it with a grain of salt because the suspect who he quoted is now dead as a result of a robot killing, which is a subject we also need to explore at some point. But according to the police chief, the dead suspect said that he wanted to kill white people, and he wanted to kill white police officers in particular. Now, this is telling because it's a direct reflection of the fact that a poor black man, a poor working-class black man, presumably, is not able to speak in the language of class, a vocabulary that has been systematically suppressed, and so therefore he reverts to the language of race. And
assuming that this is even true, but go on.
Well, yes,
we don't know that he really said any of this.
we have to be taken with a grain of salt, of course, because the police chief also tried to throw dust in the eyes of the public by referencing Black Lives Matter, as if they had something to do with this slaying in Dallas. But in any case, my wider point is that if you look at, say, the New York Times coverage of Brexit, for example, they're lamenting the fact that Labor Party strongholds voted for Brexit, and apparently Labor Party strongholds have been infected with the virus of anti-immigrant bias. But what the New York Times doesn't tell its readers is that that's a direct outgrowth of the Thatcherite suppression of the miners' union, of unions in general, which has its counterpart on this side of the Atlantic. In other words, the Trump phenomenon and this neo-fascist phenomenon in Europe does not come out of the blue. It's a direct outgrowth of policies that have been systematically pursued by elites on both sides of the Atlantic, including in Baton Rouge and Minnesota and in Dallas.
And in the United States, with this overt xenophobia and racism against Mexicans in the Trump campaign, there seems to be there is some conscious effort here and some spontaneous motion as well to consolidate overt fascist kind of forces that speak more or less openly in racist terminology. And the killing of these Dallas cops has opened, as I said, opened the door for that to have a sort of quasi-justification, because killing cops is sacrilegious, while, of course, other people getting killed by cops is not.
Well, not only that, but also the elites in the United States have systematically tried to repress organizations that have tried to combat racism and political repression. I'm thinking of Paul Robeson's Civil Rights Congress, which was ruled illegal fundamentally by the government some half century ago. And since that time, we've hardly had an organization of that stature and means to fight these kinds of outrages. So what that means is that poor young black people in cities like Dallas and in Staten Island and in Minnesota and in Louisiana oftentimes cannot express their rage and frustration and anger through organizational channels. It's oftentimes expressed, I'm afraid, in a coed manner that can lead to tragedies. For example, what presumably happened in Dallas just 24 hours ago.
All right, thanks very much for joining us, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Real News Network.